Okay, we have a quorum, so I'm going to call the Subcommittee on Gaming of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee to order. We have two bills before us today. The first is Senate File 2500, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 2500 would permit the new harness racing track in Columbus Township to seek out and enter into an agreement about operating, about simulcasting, all breed simulcasting at their track location. Some might ask, why in the world are you doing this, Bill? And for one thing, I have been skeptical about some of the requests that have came from the track, and in particular the operating the card club sooner than their license would permit. And so we did not take up Senator Scheid's bill last year that would have allowed not only all breed simulcasting, but also operating the card club early and all breed simulcasting. But it did seem to me that their request now is not for for acceleration of the card club, and to the degree that the state law allows them to operate it after a season of horse racing, that will come about if they so choose to do that. But it did seem to me that since Canterbury has all breed simulcasting, that it was just a leveling of the playing field to allow them to do that as well. And I know some will might consider it an expansion of gambling. I just consider it equalizing the activities that go on at both tracks, and I do not see it that way. So it's a pretty straightforward bill. We do need to have the author's amendment, Mr. Chairman, which addresses the issue of the effective date, and I would offer it at this time.
Senator Rest moves the A1 author's amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
We do have people to testify, but I want to also make sure, and I have assured all of the stakeholders in the gaming industry that this is one of those bills that if anything else is attached to it, the bill will just plain be withdrawn, not laid over, not set aside. There will be a message that goes to the Secretary of the Senate to return the bill to the author, and the issue will be dead. So I think all the parties understand that. The other authors on the bill understand that, and we are proceeding under that that agreement. So the bill only deals with simulcasting, and it is not going to be a vehicle for other gaming amendments. Right now, just as background, the current Minnesota law allows simulcasting for the same breed that you're racing, but not for other breeds. And but Canterbury is allowed to do that, and we would also extend that privilege to the racetrack in Anoka County. So that's the bill, and I know that there's testimony available.
Okay, we'll hear from the testifiers now. I have Jeff Halpern. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Senator Rest, members of the subcommittee. My name is Jeffrey Halpern. I'm one of the principals and founders of Southwest Casino, who is one of the partners in the Harness Track, so I've been with it from inception, and I'm, in essence, one of the founders of it as well, along with our partner, Mountaineer Gaming. I appreciate being here. We appreciate having this hearing, and I would like to, if I could, spend some time giving you a little bit of background, a little bit of additional information about what we're doing and the bill and so on, if I could.
Please do.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. As I said, our side, the Southwest Casino side, we're Minnesota folks, and we've been at this for a long time. This has been a five-year effort that probably many of you have followed. We have been scrutinized by everybody top to bottom. We've got no softballs thrown at us at all. It's always been tough. We've worked for every item. The Minnesota Racing Commission is fully supportive of us in this bill, as is the City of Columbus and the County of Anoka, all of whom will be beneficiaries of what we're doing. Just so you know, this is a $62 million privately financed facility, and it is truly state-of-the-art. If any of you have driven by the way, we're, just for location purposes, a point of reference, we're 35 E&W, come together and form 35. We're about a mile and a half north of that joint. We're the first exit on the west side. You can see it. The facility, if you talk to horse folks, is truly, as I said, state-of-the-art. We've got magnificent barns, a great track, all the most modern, best designed, and so on. It's going to be truly a wonderful addition. With Anoka not having the good fortune of getting the Vikings, we hope to fill a little bit of that void as far as another entertainment choice, and I think we will do that successfully. Racing will start on April 11th, very soon, and we'll do this formally, but you're all cordially invited to attend. Love to see all of you. It's going to be really, it's going to be fun. To distinguish this a little bit from Canterbury and from other thoroughbred tracks around, this is going to have a little bit more of a county fair atmosphere. It's going to be familial. We're going to have a separate family entrance. You know, we'll ultimately have a card room. They'll never see a card room if they don't want it. We're going to have picnic tables and face painting and rides. And we think this is what the community wants, has asked us for, and this is what we want to give the community. We think it'll be a wonderful place for people to congregate. The impact is dramatic. We project that we will generate in excess of 600 full-time job equivalents, mostly full-time. Some summer, obviously, will be part-time aggregated. We'll pay real estate taxes in excess of $800,000 a year. We'll pay $280,000 guaranteed to the City of Columbus, so they get their fair share. We're going to be providing about $90,000 in city safety and related assistance so that we're not a burden. We're going to have, for traffic purposes, we'll have police, we'll have fire, we'll have all the all the complementary services we're going to pay our way. We always pay our way, and we don't want the city to be burdened by it. We want this to be a plus-plus situation, and it will be. So that's an additional almost $90,000. One critical thing here, and this is going to be terrific for, as I say, for the City of Columbus, for Anoka, and for Minnesota. The agri impact, the equine impact, is really incredible already. We're getting a wonderful response, not only from the state of Minnesota, but elsewhere. It'll increase. I mean, people are now looking for farms. We hope that we will be every bit to the harness breed, to the standard bred, what Canterbury has been to the thoroughbred. Truly save that breed, and we're going to do the same here. The folks in Minnesota have basically had to travel to county fairs. They've never had a home. You'll be hearing a little while from Ted Nowatzki, who is one of the hardest folks, who will confirm that as well. But this is going to be a wonderful situation. I made 220 calls to harness people in 7 states and Canada, and the response I got was unbelievable. The worst call I had was a gentleman who was 83 who said, "Mr. Halpern, I'm sorry, I got rid of my last horse. I can't drive anymore, but I'll be out there rooting." So we've just had a real terrific groundswell. It makes us feel wonderful about the success, about the horses that will be there, and the participation. We're very, very excited about it, and it's been wonderful. As Senator Rest pointed out, there's always been all-breed simulcasting in Minnesota. Canterbury's enjoy that, and this is an equalization scenario. We don't know of any other tracks, frankly, that have simulcasting that don't have it. It's just a natural complement to racing. Also, I think it's important to know, because it goes alongside of racing, it's not been a product that any other entity involved in gaming or otherwise has ever pursued in the state. Nobody's frankly cared. It's what I consider low-hanging fruit in the gaming area because it's just a complement to a track scenario. We want people from the northern suburbs who perhaps would make that 50-mile trip down to Canterbury when it's the Kentucky Derby. If they're at our track and they want to place a wager in the Kentucky Derby, they'll be able to do so. It will benefit financially, and we're supported by both horsemen, the harness folks, the thoroughbred folks, both tracks. This is a win-win for everybody. It'll be a win-win for Equine and Agra. It'll be supportive of our track. It'll help us get a start. We're a new business. It's a costly endeavor. It just needs to be a complement to the package we have. And as I say, your consideration is greatly appreciated, and I appreciate Senator Rest's authorship and comments about it. Mr. Chairman, that's all that I have by way of my summary.
Well, we might take questions for each testifier as they go. Any questions for Jeff Halpern? I might ask now, you're going to have the racetrack, and we did drop the exemption for the card club. When is the card club expected start date?
Chairman Lurie, it is expected to open in July because that'll be the time by which we will have completed our 50 days of racing per the statute.
Okay, and then, so you'll have the, you know, if this passes, we'll have the harness track operating, we'll have the all-breed simulcast, and then the card club after July. Do you have any other issues that you plan in the future to bring forward? Are you planning on operating a casino here, a broader-based casino, or is this the extent of the operation that you envision into the future?
Chairman Lurie, this is it. This is what we have, we're pleased to have this reign. I mean, if something happened statewide or Canterbury did something different or whatever, obviously, as the senator pointed out, we always want to be on an even playing field. We don't want to be disadvantaged, but we are happy with this package, and we're going to pursue it. Economically, we'll be basically without the purse support because we will run the race season before the
right.
card room opens. That will be the engine that will help feed the purse. We think the purses could perhaps almost triple, to give you an idea of the impact.
That'll
in
be
year
available
two,
exactly, year,
after we've got the revenue
season.
from the card room. So it'll even be a more wonderful place for horsemen to bring their horses and to travel long distances from.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Vickerman?
Mr. Chair, I'm not a great fan of gambling, and you know that, but sometimes you have to step back and look at the big picture. And I've been willing to do that. When I look at the city, could get $500,000 property tax in the city, and makes you you wonder. I shouldn't say that I'm against gambling because I have bought a few scratch tickets, never won, so I'm going to quit that. That don't work. There's two things I want, and either you or Senator Rest. The card club is not, the extra tables is not here. That only starts by law at a certain length of time. Is that right, Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
Senator Vickerman, yes. They may start the card club. They say they're going to, but they may start the card club under law at the same level that is accorded the other track. There's no additional tables for either track here.
And that is after one season of running the harness track. And so
it's actually a number of days, but yes,
yeah.
it equals to one season.
Correct. Mr. Chair, I guess my question is all you're asking for right now is the simulcasting. You're not asking for to move up tables?
No.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust. No. And if there would be any attempt to put additional tables for either track on this bill, it would be withdrawn. The bill would be withdrawn.
Okay, well, then, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Simulcasting would start when? If you get permission to simulcast, that like start next month, or do you wait till the races go? Or?
The day after enactment. So
as soon as the, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, as soon as the bill passes, and we don't know exactly when that would be. It has to go through the process, of course. And this is just the beginning of it. But they would be able to do it the day following the passage by the, of the bill and the governor signing it.
Mr. Chair, then another question.
Senator Vickerman.
Nothing within your intention of opening another casino?
No.
Well, anything changed? I couldn't tell you what's going to happen years from now, but at this particular time, you're not looking at any new casinos operation? Or?
Chairman Lurie, Senator Vickerman, no. We have one product in Minnesota that we're anxious to get going after all these years. That is it.
I grew up in a rural Minnesota and used to watch, trotter track at every county fair. That was a big thing down there. I don't have no more, but it was. My daughter lives in Maine. I visited Maine, and they do have a trotter track in Maine, and they bet on that. And people come and they follow it, just like they follow race cars in rural Minnesota. They just follow it. I'm still kind of undecided, but I want to hear the testimony. It bothers me when I see one gentleman says, we don't want this. So I'd like to. I read it over. We try to do what's good for the whole area.
Chairman Lurie, Senator Vickerman, I was going to just make one comment on the gaming side. There will be enough going on at that facility with a separate entrance with picnic areas adjacent. If somebody wants to come out and bring their family and have a fun time, they'll never see a card room ever. We're not trying to convert. If people want to come and play poker, wonderful. If they don't, they'll have plenty to do there, and it's going to be a very fun, open environment.
This track's open to families?
Chairman Lurie, Senator Vickerman, yes, it
very
is.
Important to
yes,
me.
It is. Absolutely.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand that you're opening April 11th?
Chairman Lurie, Senator Roebling, yes, April 11th.
So, but if the bill would be become effective immediately and it would go through relatively quickly, would you be able to start simulcasting before you started live races?
I don't. Chairman Lurie, Senator Roebling, I don't think that's probably feasible as a practical matter because we're going to want to have live activity.
You're not going to be open. You're not going to be open.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to have a facility that will be open prior to that time. We're heading towards completion of construction. Thank you, Senator Rez. And as a practical matter, everything will commence April 11th, and hopefully we'll have a bill completed and we'll be able to have everything but our card room commencing April 11th.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Just to comment, the great Dan Patch was from Scott County, and he was a harness racer, or pacer, as Senator Vickerman mentioned. It just seems a little ironic that Canterbury's in Scott County, and now the harness track will be up there in the northern suburbs. But I hope you keep his reputation alive.
Chairman Lurie, Senator Roebling, I got to, if I may just digress. We've been working with the Dan Patch Historical Society now for a couple of years, and I just finished, I got an email confirmation a couple of days ago from Janet Williams, who is the secretary of the society, and she's now the mayor of Savage, who has been a terrific supporter, and we got their blessings to put, we've got an incredible piece of Dan Patch coming towards you, in the entry area, a bigger than life-size image of Dan Patch driven by Dr. Savage. It's incredible. And we are going to have a Dan Patch Day and a Dan Patch Series. he was the greatest of all and a Minnesota horse to boot. So we're going to honor him in a number of different ways, and we'll honor the society on our opening day.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think I'd be tempted to come on April 11th, but I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to be busy. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mel Mettler is the next one I have on my agenda, unless anyone has any other questions. Mel Mettler available?
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sure.
And is that Mastel? This is Mel Mettler and John Mastel,
and John,
correct?
Mastel.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Senator or Chairman Lurie and Senators. My name is Mel Mettler. I'm the mayor of Columbus. Thank you for appearing here, John.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Mastel, and I'm the chair for the Planning Commission for the City of Columbus.
I think we can be fairly brief. I've met a few of you here. We became a city here about a year and a half ago, and we went through a process. So I've become a little bit familiar with things here at the Capitol. We are a city. We are 4,000 people. I think Mr. Halpern located us a little bit. We are at the split, the north end of 35W and 35E. Everybody calls it the Forest Lake Split, even though it's in Columbus. Maybe someday that'll change, maybe not. I think I'm here very simply to tell you from a standpoint of from the official standpoint, because I am the official spokesman for the city as mayor, I found out. We've been through quite a few ups and downs. It has been about a five-year process. When Southwest Casino, these people came in, North Metro Harness Initiative, we thoroughly researched it. We've been through a lot of the battles with them, standing on the sideline. I can't impress upon you how much this track is anticipated by the people in the area. It's been very easy to work with these people. We've got about a $30 million building up there. Krauss Anderson was a contractor. I've talked to our building inspectors. Anytime there's a question that comes up, the problems have been solved. It's not been painful at all. They've been cooperative from the get-go here. The economic impact, of course, is huge to a small community, but it's just the whole general area. Typically, all of the official business organizations, the Chamber of Commerce, have been supportive of this. I think he mentioned 600 type plus full-time jobs, payroll of like $10 million a year. The impact of the racing, the agribusiness, the horse people themselves, as well as the surrounding area. We can't wait to see it open. From an economic standpoint, from every standpoint that we can look at it as a city, we're all thumbs up. There are some other issues. There's always a gambling issue. That's always going to be a question. We've been through those discussions literally for the last 3 to 4 years. There's been challenges. There's been elections. There's been legal challenges. And we finally got to the point where basically we're close to the finish line here. So we're very excited. Not a day goes by that I don't run into somebody who's talking about the harness track, wanting to know when it opens, et cetera. So, John?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would be redundant if I went through my whole list here because both Mr. Halpern now and our Mayor Mettler have touched base on the majority of what I had to say, but I would like to bring a couple of points to your attention. In the then township of Columbus, I was the one responsible for chairing the public hearings for this request. And I would like to tell you that this was, in my 15-plus years on the Planning Commission now, the single most researched, dissected, scrutinized, considered proposal that we had ever had in the then township of Columbus. We made sure, with the assistance of a very able-bodied planner, attorney, engineer, that we attempted to dot all the I's and cross all the T's on this proposal. We had to go through some rezoning. Everything was done above board and open. But the thing that impressed me the absolute most when this proposal was first brought forth to us, there was no request whatsoever for any kind of tax assistance, tax reduction, tax increment financing, money from the city, money from the county, money from the state, or money from the federal government to have this come to our community. In this day and age, to have a proposal such as this where no one was asking for us to help them to develop was a rarity. We've not, as a city, been asked to contribute one thin dime to make this entity function. This was a delight to deal with to that extent. We see it as a win-win for the vast majority of our entire region, everything north in the Twin Cities. The request that is before you is simply to, as Mr. Halpern said, allow this entity to operate on a level playing field with Canterbury. I've been to Canterbury a number of times. I've taken my children to Canterbury. I would love to see this entity become a success so that I can continue to take my family to an activity such as this. This is very much family-oriented in the way it is being presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
You've got Ted Nowatzki. I hope I'm saying that something close to correct.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yes,
to
you
the
are
committee.
Saying it correct, Ted Nowatzki.
Okay. Welcome.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. My name is Ted Nowatzki, and I'm Vice President of the Minnesota Harness Racing Association here in Minnesota. We have approximately 150 members of our organization, and basically we race at four different fairs throughout the state of Minnesota. And now we're very happy to be able to say that we have a place to race our horses here in the state for a very long period of time. So we're very enthused about it, and most of our people ship out of state, and now we don't have to ship our horses out of state to race. Most of our people went to Des Moines, Iowa last fall. We went to Chicago, and we just got back from Chicago probably 3 weeks ago. So a lot of people think that you just bring a horse out of the pasture and start racing the horse immediately. It takes a long time to get a horse ready, anywhere from 90 days to 120 days to get a horse ready. In fact, I jogged my horse today 4 miles in the cold weather. So they're very, very durable animal, and we're very happy to be able to say that we have a place to race here in the state of Minnesota. When we were in Des Moines as well as in Chicago, all of the tracks were allowed to simulcast all different breeds of horse racing, the thoroughbreds, the quarter horses, and so on. So we feel that this is a very must need for this track to be able to do the same, as everybody said, just like Canterbury did, 55 miles away from where this track is going to be. So that's basically all I have to say, and we're very happy to be able to race. We just went through a tour of the facilities about 2 weeks ago, and it's something to see. So I hope that all you people can come out and watch these races, and everybody should have a very, very good time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I might add, I've been up to see the facility as well, and I just personally hope that my wife doesn't get there to see the facility for the horses, because we have wonderful facilities, but not as wonderful as yours. So
right.
It could get some jealousy going. Any questions for this testifier? If not, thank you for bringing forth your thoughts. Next on the list is, I believe, somebody in opposition, Don Steinke from Forest Lake. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Lowry and members of the committee. My name is Don Steinke. I put my address down as Forest Lake because that's our mailing address. I've lived in Columbus for 57 years. I come before you today representing the Columbus Concerned Citizens, a 501c4 corporation. We have been at the Capitol opposing this language or similar language that is contained in Senate File 2500 since 2003. You have heard that the opposition to the track in Columbus is now gone and that it has been replaced by overwhelming support. Saying something doesn't make it so. In fact, opposition to the track remains strong. Senate File 2500 asks you to approve all breed simulcasting for running aces. Our community has been told over and over that this facility is a family-friendly venture that is all about helping the horse industry and agriculture in Minnesota. You've heard that again just from the previous testifiers. If this is really the case, and they want to, but why do they want to start racing horses on April 11th and quit on July 6th? What happened to the rest of the summer for racing horses? This legislation proposes to put millions of dollars in the pockets of the developers while doing very little for the industry they say they built to support. You have been told there is an agreement between Canterbury and Running Aces to share all the all-breed simulcasting revenue. Have you seen this agreement? The Running Aces owners have come to many different government bodies with all kinds of alleged agreements, but the agreements have never been signed or have been changed many times before and if they were executed. According to the Star Tribune in an October 13, 2007 article, Canterbury took in $59 million on all-breed simulcasting, but only $3 million came from harness racing simulcasting. If Canterbury wants to give away $56 million, then let's see what kind of a deal has been worked out. Canterbury has come before you in the past asking for the expansion of card tables so they can increase their revenues, but now they are willing to give up revenues to a new competitor. There is also a cry that has been heard here today about that this must be we must be fair about simulcasting. After all, if Canterbury can simulcast harness racing, then why can't Running Aces simulcast all breeds? Again, if this is such an important issue now, then why not get the law changed before the facility is built? After all, they have known for 5 years that all-breed simulcasting was not allowed. If it was not fair the last 5 years, why is it suddenly fair today? They have repeatedly told the community that this is a viable business as it was originally proposed. So what is the real reason for this legislative change? Perhaps this is it. The business venture was financed by a $41.7 million line of credit with a floating interest rate starting at over 12%, which has now come down to a little less than 10%. The loan has a final balloon payment due on April 20, 2014, less than 6 years from the running of the first race. This is likely the reason for the legislative change, not to help the horse racing industry in Minnesota. We fail to see any reason to expand gambling in Minnesota. The owners of Running Aces have known since before they started this venture what the law was. They have tried every year, unsuccessfully, since 2003 to change the law. No one forced them to build this facility with outrageous financing. Why should you bail them out with a law change when they had no business starting to build before they had the tools in place to become successful? This seems to be putting the cart before the horse. A Running Ace representative who you heard here already, Mr. Jeff Halperin, came before the September 20, 2007 meeting of the Minnesota Racing Commission, and when asked specifically by Commission Overton what would happen if this legislation does not pass, replied that it is a multi-million dollar item but would not be a death blow if they did not receive the simulcasting. Running Aces management has stated that this legislation is not needed for their financial success, so then let's make them abide by their word. Just because Running Aces agreed to drop their request for the waiver of 50 days of live racing before they could open their card room, don't give them all breed simulcasting as a reward for this. After all, wasn't this supposed to be a racetrack? Why pass this bill and allow the opening of a floodgate of gambling expansion in Minnesota? We ask you to defeat Senate File 2500, just as we have done for the last 5 years, and stop the expansion of gambling in Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your thoughtful testimony and questions. Senator Rusty, would you like to respond to any of the questions, or would members have any questions? Senator Vickerman? Senator Rust. Yes.
What is the progress in anticipation of being able to do that? If they had any conversations with the horse person's organization, et cetera, just the way that is.
Sure. I think that would be appropriate.
Mr. Steinke did bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that would be appropriate. Mr. Halpern, would you care to come back and give your thoughts on some of these questions, particularly the Section 2?
First of all, it is a Chairman Lurie,
Mr. Halpern.
It is a federal requirement that there be sharing, and we do have an agreement with Canterbury that has been fully executed, which we'll be happy to provide you with, that deals with sharing. Basically, it's a 30% share of our share. I don't have all the numbers at my disposal, but if you look at this, I talked to our CFO this morning, and it was estimated that about an additional $1 million would come to the horsemen and about an additional $1 million would come to the track. That basically, Mr. Stanky is correct, that obviously, thoroughbred racing is a much bigger commodity today than harness is, and this all-breed simulcast bill will essentially, it appears to projected to triple our revenues, our simulcast revenues. I indeed did testify or responded to Commissioner Overton at a commission meeting. No, there's no fatality here, but fatality is not what this is all about. This is a natural complement. It exists already. Why wouldn't we have the benefit? Why wouldn't that? We wouldn't have a total racing experience, which includes all breed simulcasting. If I may also, Chairman, the reason we're starting April 11th, I'm not thrilled about being out there April 11th, but we're abiding by Minnesota law. We cannot open our card room for 50 days. That card room will be the ultimate engine to help support the purses in this new industry that we're going to be, that we're financing and going to be putting out. In future years, we expect that we will have a more traditional May through August season. The April to July season is not going to be the norm. It was necessitated because, as Senator Rest mentioned earlier, we did not and have not achieved, and we pulled any efforts to try to change the 50-day requirement as a prerequisite to opening up our card room. You know, if I may offer, there was always kind of a bait-and-switch thought here, like, gee, you'll just play cards, and where's the horse racing? Well, after having a $62 million investment and the most beautiful barns in the country and the most state-of-the-art track and all the efforts we've made with horsemen and what you heard from Vice President Nowatzki a moment ago, this is certainly not a bait and switch. And by the way, if we ever did do anything at all that did not fulfill every commitment we had to the Minnesota Racing Commission, our license would be yanked in 1 second. So we will abide fully and be there in every compliant fashion. There's no other option or any other alternative, and nothing of the kind. So, and the comments about our financing, no. Is this a death blow if we didn't get it? No, we're not. It's not that kind of a thing on a string, no, but it ought to be part and parcel of what's been the case in every track in the country and Canterbury up till now. I mean, it's very difficult to comprehend why you wouldn't permit, why you would not have or should not have all-breed simulcasting, which has been part of the state and the state's involvement with racing from day one. That's been the case. Canterbury's enjoyed it, and we ought to have the ability to do so, too.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, just go back when we first put together the other one, the others at Canterbury. It was in the law that there is allowed a second track in my last Senate council, but is that right?
Mr. Thangala?
There can be two tracks. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, that's correct. There can be two tracks.
Well, for a person who doesn't like gambling, I guess I'm going to change my direction because I don't think this is an expansion of gambling because we've already did it way back when I voted the last time to move the track. If we need simulcasting to make it go, maybe that's what we ought to allow. Certainly don't want it to fall or fail after you put that much money into it. I want to ask one final question. There'll be no other gambling devices there, no slot machines, strictly what you've got in simulcasting and in time when cards come. That comes automatically.
Chairman Lurie, Senator Vickerman, that is correct. That is correct. And you are absolutely correct about the two tracks being authorized for many, many years. If I may, Chairman Lurie and Senator Vickerman, just address the committee. The law stated in the seven-county metro area, two tracks. Obviously, we've got a thoroughbred track with Canterbury, and it was supposed to be a 20-mile distance, simply so they weren't on top of one another. We are 50-plus miles away at the very outer point, if you will, of the seven-county area, one, to cover different turf to give proper due to the northern suburbs that have been underserved, and two, to stay out of Canterbury's hair and vice versa so we can be cooperative and so on. And you're absolutely right, Senator, that's been in the law for many years, and it is certainly not an expansion. And simulcast is a natural complement. It is not make or break life or death, but it needs to be there. It's a product that's part and parcel of any racetrack in the country. Why should ours be different, if I may suggest?
Thank you, Senator Vickerman.
I still don't believe in gambling, but some people do. And I've got a cabin up north, or Jackpot Junction's right close to me. It's full on Sunday. Somebody likes to do it. And if that's their enjoyment, I don't have anything against it. I've had elderly people say that's our entertainment. So we can sit here, and I can be the purist and say no more gambling, but I know it's going to come in time. We're in a tough situation right now. We don't have any money. If this is a way that your community can gain some money, then I think it'd be bad for me if I wouldn't support it. So I'm going to support it, even if I don't like gambling. So you have my vote whenever you're ready.
Chairman Lurie, Senator Vickerman, we appreciate that support very much. I know you've labored over this for a number of years, and we appreciate it. That means a lot to us.
Thank you. Any other questions of the members? Anyone else? Mr. McCollum.
Mr. Chairman, I just noticed a technical correction that needs to be made before we proceed. And that's the statutory reference on page 3, line 33. At the bottom of page 3 there, it refers to section 240.06 sub 5B, paragraph B. Well, 240.06 sub 5B is the new language in section 2, and there is no paragraph B. So it should be paragraph 2.
Paragraph 2. Senator Rest moves that.
Make that. I move to amend. I'm trying to find the.
Everyone understands.
Would you just indicate again to Mr. McGowan, Mr. Chairman, where that is?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, it would be on page 3, line 33. Delete that second B there, the one in parentheses, and insert 2.
Everyone understand the amendment? Senator Rest's motion is before us. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the testimony of all the folks that came today. In my mind, what we're doing is just making the practice of simulcasting consistent at the Anoka track that happens all over the country, and that happens even in our own state at the first track we authorize, Canterbury, and it's a very straightforward bill. And I move that Senate File 2500 as amended be recommended to pass and proceed to the full committee.
Is there anyone else from the audience who would like to speak either in favor or opposed to this bill? Okay. Seeing none, Senate File 2500. Senator Rest moves Senate File 2500 be recommended to pass and sent to the full committee on state and local government operations.
As amended.
As amended. Sent to the full committee on state and local government operations and oversight. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Chairman Lurie, members of the committee, thank you very much. Sure. Appreciate it. We won't let you down. Thank you so much.
The next bill we have before us is Senate File 2533, also Senator Rest. Welcome again.
Chairman and members, 2533 amends the definition of gambling device in the Minnesota Criminal Code, and it has been a subject of discussion over the years of how this particular part of the statute is to be interpreted, implemented, acted on, enforced, and this past interim, Mr. Mark Shields came and suggested that we needed to clarify what the intent of this language is and to reduce any ambiguity in it. We are stating that if there's a gambling device, the law is, if there's a gambling device like a slot machine, the assumption is that gambling goes on there. You don't have to witness gambling to go on in order for the presumption to be made that gambling occurs. And that is what the bill is clarifying in my mind. Not changing the law, it's clarifying the law. But I would ask Mr. Shields to come forward and give the subcommittee a bit of history on it and why he feels in the enforcement of this law that it is necessary to proceed with this bill at this time.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Shields, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Shields. I'm the director of the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. There is a curious history to this legislation. For the last 17 years, it's been pretty straightforward, black and white for my agents. When they came across gambling devices, bars, restaurants, or other locations, the law that we have been following is referred to as the per se. If this microphone in front of me, this inanimate object, if you will, was a slot machine, video game of poker, it was real clear, and for 17 years we just said that is, we followed the per se argument, and it is therefore illegal to possess. Minor exception, you can have some of those devices in your home for recreational purposes and so on. And then a funny thing happened on the way to enforcement is oftentimes it does happen over a length of time with new eyes, sometimes with prosecutors and others who weren't around during the years between 1984 and 1990 when a lot of this was enacted. They look at it today and say, no, we see it as different. We see it that you have to have someone betting on the device to make it illegal. That was somewhat news to us. So we have about three different incidents where this has occurred in the last year or so. As a result of that, I put a suspension of our activity in this part of our office till we could get some clarification. And so Senator Rest, once she heard that, was gracious enough to move forward with it. Briefly, the history, and somewhat of a interesting. About 1984, for some of you about my age, you can recall, and at that time I was superintendent of BCA in the other part of public safety, video poker games were in bars and restaurants. The legislature allowed that, but they said, hey, time out, no gambling, but you can have them for amusement purposes. Many people, bars and restaurants, took the high road and did it just that, and there was points added on there. Unfortunately, there were some that took a lower road, and there was gambling, payoffs under the table, and so on. our agents to make an arrest and to enforce had there had to witness this. So you can imagine the tremendous amount of activity we'd have to do to get engaged in that type of activity. About 2 years later, this body, the legislature, said, well, wait a minute, time out. If there actually is gambling going on in those bars and restaurants on these video games of poker, then we'll increase it to a gross misdemeanor. So that was a law for about a year. And then all of a sudden, the problem started mushrooming, and the legislature, in about between 1989 to 1990, said enough is enough. They took it out of Chapter 349, where gambling issues were, brought it forward to the criminal code, and said it is a gambling device. So from 1990 till 2007, about 17 years, we've been following that. But again, I underscore, and I guess in some part of me, it doesn't surprise me, and this happens in a lot of legislation passed, whatever the original intent was. Over time, new prosecutors, new young analysts that look at things see it differently, and so that brings us back here. So it's kind of back to the future. We're asking to go back to what we know, and I know back at that time, and I think Senator Rust was engaged in it as well as a member of the House at that time, that the inanimate object, at the gambling device per se, is illegal to be in possession.
Thank you. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shields, we've mentioned slot machines, but this talks about gambling devices. Are there other kinds of gambling devices that are out there that can cause this kind of a problem?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, there's variations, and it's kind of a continuum from where you go to an arcade and you have the little machine amusement game going in and grabbing the fluffy doll and bringing it up and bringing it out and moves up the continuum where it gets up about the middle of the continuum and starts shifting over to an amusement game, to a gambling device. It does become a little bit, I don't want to say subjective, but that's where we have, through some case law and interpretations in the past, and I think that's why 60975 sub 8, I don't even refer to me, came about, was to try to get that clarification. I think the industry is quite aware of what is a gambling device as compared to an amusement game.
Well,
Senator
Mr. Chair,
Betzel.
I'm trying to use my imagination. I don't gamble, so what kind of machines are out there that you think should be illegal beyond slot machines?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, the group where this has come up from time to time is, let's refer to it as Las Vegas-style gambling. And I think that kind of puts it in the terms, you know, slot machines,
roulette wheels,
the spin wheels, those are the more traditional types. And if you know there are casino night operators out there that have kind of a cottage industry that has, you know, gambling for play, if you will, but they know they do not participate with slot machines, the spin wheels, the roulettes, the craps, the Las Vegas-styled types of gambling devices, which is pretty well understood within the industry. So we have come across cases where even today, in 2006, we had slot machines in restaurants. And although we did not witness gambling going on, we brought to the attention and said, quite frankly, that's a gambling device per se. It's illegal. This is the way we've interpreted it for the last 17 years. So you have to remove it. When it came time for the case to be going to the county attorney in this particular case looked at it and opined that just the inanimate object itself had to have, it wasn't illegal on its own, it had to have the gambling with it. So that brings us, that's exactly where we're back.
Again, Mr. Chair, I've heard you say slot machines, roulette wheels, paddle wheels. Those are the main things you're trying to get at here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, yes. Those are the main kind of terms referred to as gambling devices.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Roebling.
I'm a little confused. If it was disabled to the point where it couldn't have any payout, it would still be considered illegal?
Mr. Shields?
An antique device of some kind.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it's an interesting question because in the roaring 80s, for lack of a better term, that was often what my agents found when they would come to places where these devices were. They would be disabled temporarily, the pieces would be taken out, and they'd say, hey, it's not a gambling device, no gambling's going on here. My agents would leave, go down the road a bit, go to the next town. All of a sudden, those devices were put in place. It's no longer disabled. The rub comes, and I think a legitimate rub comes for if it's an antique, and if it's a device that is just sitting there and it's way back from when and probably is not intended to have gambling, and maybe the manager of the restaurant does not gamble with it, but we're caught with that same situation that at least the law that we have been acting under for 17 years is following the per se argument.
Mr. Chair, if that's the case, then you know you can set up gambling games on any computer, and I mean people do it all the time. You don't need a slot machine. You can do it with your computer. How would you regulate something like that if an establishment set that up and customers would come in, and I mean they'd be gambling online probably, but there's an opportunity for a payout. I don't see how you would control that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, that's a great question because that moves us into what's referred to as internet gambling, which is illegal, but which is an enormous issue that the feds are currently trying to get their arms around at this time. And that is a real challenge for the enforcement community. But as it stands right now, using computers on the internet gambling area is illegal.
And I guess just to clarify my own understanding of this provision, this is really putting back in statute the understanding that you'd been operating under for 17 years. So we're bringing the statute into compliance with what's actually been happening out on the street for the last 17 years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Senator Betzold?
But Mr. Chair, it does raise questions that I think Senator Roebling suggests. I mean, you know, you got the old and the new. The new technology, you know, is pretty sophisticated. I mean, you know, if somebody can gamble, you know, on a handheld device, their cell phone, you know, and it's tying into something else, is that to be confiscated? What if you have one of the old-fashioned slot machines? I mean, I remember seeing pictures of when Governor Youngdahl had all things bulldozed and so forth. What if somebody managed to put one in their attic and they pulled it out and it's not functional? It is an old slot machine. It doesn't have all the stuff that they have today, but somebody just displays it as, you know, as an antique. You know, is that something that's going to be confiscated? It may not work, but you know whether or not the contrivance is actually played is immaterial. It's illegal per se to own something, even if it's antique. I don't know. It could be broadly interpreted, I think.
Senator Rust?
Well, Mr. Chairman, but Senator Betzel, it is not illegal to keep it in your house, and what we're trying to do here, as was pointed out, is to clarify the practice. The so-called antique that would be set up in a restaurant, Mark Shields and his agents can take now, according to the practice of the law, as they have been doing it for the last 17 years. It is others now who are trying to twist the meaning of the law, and so what they are asking for is crystal clear language that the law as it has been applied for the last 17 years may continue to be applied in the same consistent manner. And perhaps before this law was enacted, the issue of antique gambling devices was fully discussed as well, and nevertheless, this was adopted as our statute, and we're not trying to change the statute in that regard at all. Or that's at least how I understand the proposal as it came to me.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Betzel.
There's a second provision in the bill, too. It's a repealer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lurie, it's my understanding that they usually print the repealer on the back of the introduced copy.
And I get in there, Matt.
Don't have
members it. Have the language in their folders, I'm
it is,
told. And, we do have it in our folders, and we have the council's description of it as well.
It wasn't in mine. It's also explained in Mr. McGowan's summary, but in effect, it is repealing, as I understand it, what is an unenforceable law. But I would ask Mr. Shields also to explain why that has come about, to repeal a law that talks about the manufacturer of gambling devices, that it's impossible to tell where they're going and if they're legal in where they're going, and we know that we don't allow them to come into our state illegally, but when it's manufactured in Minnesota currently, it would be a problem to determine whether it's being done legally in terms of its destination. But Mr. Shields give you a little bit more background on the repealer.
Mr. Chairman, I think this one is pretty straightforward. Just as the gambling issue was brought out of Chapter 349 and moved up to the criminal code, I think this is a residue that never just came across. In 1990, our organization, any slot machine that comes into the state, any manufacturer from out of other states that brings in gambling devices into Minnesota, we do the licensing. We are the regulator for that entity. I think there was one little conflict and one omission that allows you could be a manufacturer in the state making gambling devices, but if you export them to another state, that you're not under the regulatory purview of the state of Minnesota. The other side of my house is the alcohol regulatory component, and manufacturers, whether you're making it and selling it elsewhere or it's being imported in, it's all part of the regulatory scheme. And I think this was an oversight. We thought it was pretty straightforward, that Chapter 299 was more specific than Chapter and more recent. So we thought it passed the legal test. But there are some of those questions still hanging out there. So we thought it made sense to get this clarified once and for all. A manufacturer is a manufacturer. If you're in the state of Minnesota, you're making these types of devices, that you have to be licensed.
Senator Betzold.
Just to be clear, then, if somebody's manufacturing a device, they will not fall under what's in Section 1. You're not going to go into some manufacturers and confiscate their goods because they happen to own gambling devices.
No.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Roman.
I was just saying, if you manufacture them, there was this conflict between 299 right. and 349, or at least an ambiguity, and all this is saying that anybody who manufactures them, period, in Minnesota needs license, unlicensed, and will be have oversight of Mr. Shields' agency. It doesn't say it's illegal to manufacture them. It just says you need a license.
And Mr. Chair, and Mr. Shields, we don't have all the statutes before us. Where does it say, then, they can... If they're a licensed manufacturer, that's okay for them to do it, and that's off limits to what your agents
that's
are.
That's in 299, and we don't. I don't have that chapter.
That's my enabling legislation. That's our enabling legislation.
Okay. Yeah, 299 is their enabling legislation, Mr. Shields points out.
Thank you. Senator Roebling.
I want to go back to Section 1 again, if I can. I'm just wondering about these possibly antique or non-functioning. I know people who have these I think they're really, really cool. And if now Senator Rust said, and this is for Mr. McGowan maybe, that they can be put in your homes. Now, if they're in any public place, like even a historical society or something like that, are they then illegal under the current provision that we're looking at?
Mr. McGowan?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I'm not sure about that. Maybe Mr. Shields would know.
Mr. Shields?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, excuse me, I was in a sidebar conversation, so could I have that question again?
Well, it's my understanding that these antique devices or slot machines could be in your home.
Correct.
But if they're in a public place, that this would make them illegal, even if they're disabled. So if the Historical Society would have them, and my county might, because slot machines were once a really hot item there, and are again, but in a different venue, would that not be legal to have them in any public place?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I believe that is permissible, and I'm going to turn to my person, my staff. I know we have, you can donate. For example, when we confiscate them, and we do have many antiques that we have confiscated over the years, we donate them to the Historical Society. And once they are in a museum, that's permissible, and we exchange the paperwork, and it puts it in that capacity. So I think the law permits that. The issue was if you have an antique and you're in a restaurant you're just viewing it as one thing, but if all of a sudden you start using it even with slugs or other devices and you allow someone to, they spin the wheels and allows the person to get food prices back in the 1970s prices versus the 1980s, 90s, and so on, all of a sudden you start gravitating towards the issues that we were concerned with.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rowe.
You're taking all the fun out of life.
Any other questions from members?
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2533 be recommended pass and referred to the full committee.
Anyone else from the audience care to testify either in favor or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, we have the motion by Senator Rust to recommend that Senate File 2533 be recommended to pass and sent to the full committee on state and local government operations and oversight. All in favor of that motion? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
My staff just told me I should have joined. We could have carried that.
Seeing no further motion before this committee, the Subcommittee on Gaming under the State and Local Government and Operations and Oversight is adjourned. Thank you.